Hi, friends. Welcome back to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart, and today I sit down with my season one America's Next Top Model sister, Katie Clearly. You may recognize her from modeling, television, and her work in film, but today's conversation goes much deeper. Katie walked through unimaginable loss, public scrutiny, and a season that nearly broke her. Yet God met her in the middle of it and gently rebuilt her life from the ground up. This is a story of grief, surrender, and redemption, and how God continued pursuing her long after the lights and cameras faded. Wherever you are in your own journey, I believe this episode will remind you that there is no pit so deep that God's love isn't deeper still. Let's dive in. Katie, I am so excited to have you on the podcast. This is seriously a blast from the past. I think it's been 20 years since we've seen each other or talked like this, at least.
I can't believe it. It's been over 20 years. Yeah, I think, 2013? And that was, wow, I feel old.
2003.
Oh my, wait, 2013? Oh my gosh, what am I talking about? 2003?
That's not right.
I can't believe it.
Doesn't it seem like yesterday in a way, Top Model in some aspects? Because it does for me.
It does. No. Just because people keep contacting, they'll be like, oh, I saw you on Top Model the first season. I said, that's a long time ago. But it definitely gave us a platform, I think, to be able to do something greater, right?
Yeah, it definitely did. It's amazing. I think when COVID hit in 2020, people were bored, stuck inside their house, and they started rewatching Top Model because I started getting asked to do interviews and different things. But people started writing me, and it was like 2003 all over again in a way.
I love it. Well, you look beautiful. You look the same.
Look the same. I remember seeing you in California for the semifinals, and I saw you. I was like, she is stunning. I just knew you were going to be some competition for me.
And so are you. So are you. And I'm so happy that we connected on so many levels. And of course, our faith being key, being number one.
Yes. Since we're talking about Top Model, and I'm sure there's going to be some Top Model fans tuning in for this. What was season one like for you?
Wow. Well, season one was interesting because I really didn't know what to expect. I was in college at the time and I lost my tape actually. And so, yeah, I had a producer call me and they said, okay, I got to make one more tape because we lost it and you might be selected. I said, okay, great. So I made another tape. I didn't think anything of it. I just mailed it in and I got a call from Tyra. And they told me ahead of time, like, make sure there's a camera set up by your phone because we want to catch the moment, right? And I thought, what is this? This is crazy. And sure enough, Tyra called me and I was like, there's no way this is Tyra. And she goes, girl, she goes, yes, this is Tyra Banks. She goes, I'm so sorry you didn't make it. And I said, oh, I said, well, you know, thanks for letting me know. But like, if you don't mind me asking, you know, why? And she goes, girl, I'm just messing with you. She goes, of course you made it. Check your bags. You're going to New York. And I'm like, there's no way. This is crazy. And so I really didn't know what to expect. And we watched the premiere actually when I was in college in Wisconsin.
Wow.
A bunch of people over. It was fun. I mean, this was like, gosh, 2003 is so long ago.
So long ago. I remember the first morning waking up and I had braces. So I had my retainer in my mouth and a camera was in my face. And I remember thinking, oh no, I need to take my retainer out. The camera was in my face. That was a whole new world because I was from a small town and being in New York City in the big city, living with girls from all different backgrounds. It was a unique experience.
Very unique. I know. But it was worth it because, it gives you a platform to be a voice for something much greater than yourself and spreading the word about Jesus and faith and Christianity and then my mission for animals and raising awareness for endangered species. And that's really my mission. And that was the platform I was able to use as a result of that show and then Deal or No Deal and a couple different shows that I've done along the way.
But I forgot about Deal or No Deal. I saw you on that.
Yeah, that was good. It was a good run for 4 years. And Tyra is actually on the show. So funny.
Really?
She was like a guest on the show.
I did not know that. Wow. What a small world.
She guest hosted. Yeah. So yeah, it was interesting. It was just amazing where life takes you. It's a roller coaster. And you just don't think that a show like that or Deal or No Deal or anything else will kind of bring you to the point where we are now. And here we are reconnected and talking about life and faith and everything along the way, right?
It's amazing. God does put people in our past at different times. He may remove them for a time and for a season, and he may mm-hmm. bring them back. And this is full circle. This is so awesome. And then I get to dive into your story and to your testimony, and I get to hear about all the things that God has done in your life. And I am super excited. It's something that only God could write. And I'm just so excited about this.
100%. I'm so happy that you reached out to me and I was able to be on your show, because I saw that, you know, you uploading this podcast. I'm like, this is incredible. I love the fact that you're doing this and you're spreading faith and Jesus' message. It's super important, especially now.
Thank you so much. I hope to shine the light of Jesus Christ and give some people hope that may have lost it. And for the prodigals and for the runaways and the rebels, that they're not too far gone. Jesus' grace is enough.
Yeah.
What were you like as a young girl?
Oh, I was a tomboy. I always liked to get my hands dirty. I was always like exploring in like random forests. My mom's like, where are you going? And I'm like, yeah. And I would rescue animals. And you know, I was 11 years old. I started saving puppies and kittens and bottle feeding them with my mom. And we grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. And she was a single mom. So she worked really, really hard. And I was basically raised by my grandparents, my grandfather. I feel like he was always really my father figure. And my grandmother, like my second mother. And so if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have the strength to get through this roller coaster that has been the last 10 years. You know, so blessed that I had them. And my grandmother's going to be 102 this year. So she's still living. And
oh my goodness.
Incredible.
Does she still live there?
She's still in Chicago. Yeah.
Wow. So that is amazing.
Yeah. It's such a blessing, because so many important people have passed from my life, and I know that we'll see them again. But yeah, growing up was very interesting. I was around all adults my whole life, only child. And my passion was, you know, saving animals, rescuing wildlife. We would, you know, oh gosh, find everything. We would birds that fallen out of a nest, or squirrels, or bottle feeding kittens and finding them forever homes. That's really was a passion of my mom's that she bestowed upon me. And that's why I feel like being in the entertainment business at such a young age also was able to strengthen me and, you know, give me that fortitude to continue with my mission now for saving animals and being a voice for them.
Were you raised in the church?
I was raised in the church. Yeah. So Roman Catholic. And I would have to go to Sunday school every Sunday, but I didn't really understand it back then. And so now I realize, wow, this was incredibly important. One of the most important things that my family gave me, you know, I was had a confirmation and communion and all the Roman Catholic traditions. Now I consider myself more Christian. And truly, there's been so many things in my life and so many moments where God has truly saved me. And I know that I'm here for a purpose and a reason, because it could have gone the other way so many times. And I know that we're all being protected, those that have faith and have a greater purpose. And we'll find out one day when we meet Jesus, you know, what was all this about? And why going through so many trials and the heartbreak and the turmoil and the loss? But we wouldn't be who we are today if we didn't go through it.
True. And we can't see the whole picture. We only see in part. And he sees it all. Everything. Trust me, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask a lot of questions. Yes. Lord, why did you close this door? Why did you have me wait 20 years for this? I have so many questions for
That's
him. But
so many. Oh my gosh. But it, you know, life is worth it. It's just, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. You just have to keep pushing forward, even though sometimes we wake up and we're like, I'm exhausted and I've got 11 animals that I've got to feed and I've got to clean. And it's constant, like 24 hours a day, taking care of these animals and running the news network, World Animal News. And then we're working on our third documentary about wolves, Protectors of the Wild. Wow. And so I'm like, you know, and just trying to raise the funds and getting people to actually care and want to help. That's the hardest part, convincing people that animals do matter. And they deserve our protection and our respect. And so you just have to keep fighting every day, because God knows that we're not going to give up. That's why he put us in the position that we're in. He put his warriors here now. This time is not for the weak. This is for his strongest. He put his strongest warriors here now to join forces. And that's what we're doing.
Amen. Well, let's fast forward a little bit. You got married. Can you tell me what drew you into that relationship?
So I met my husband at a dog park in Los Angeles. And he was a huge animal lover, and that was really key. I thought, okay, I need to find somebody that loves animals just as much as I do. And I'm a sucker for the tall, dark, and handsome. He was like 6'4", blue eyes, and such a sweetheart, had such an incredible, kind soul. Sadly, he was dealing with a lot that I didn't realize and I wasn't aware of when we had gotten married. And so 4 years into the marriage, he had taken his life. And sadly, it was what the media did to sensationalize something that was not sensational at all, that was truly heartbreaking, because they want to hurt people, and hurt people, right? So if you have a greater mission on this earth and you're fighting for something other than yourself, which I have been since the moment I began my animal welfare organization, really the moment I knew I wanted to be involved in rescuing animals when I was 11 years old, the darkness likes to test you and will do anything to stop you from your mission, right? So I feel like this was a test for me, and not only a test, but living this out in front of the world and being attacked and condemned for something that I never did, which was interesting. I never really talked about it. And so you're the first podcast that I've done really, really openly talking about this. I've suppressed it for many years just because my purpose was for the animals. I wanted to focus on the animals, and everyone wanted to focus on something and sensationalize and make this such a terrible story that really it was incredible tragedy, but they were trying to place blame. And when somebody takes their life, you can't really place blame. It's that person's choice. And that's one thing I want to say, you know, there's always hope. And so when people deal with depression or if they're taking medication, which was the case of what happened with my husband, I tried my hardest. I tried my hardest to talk with him and show him the way and show him there's more to life and you need to have faith and it will get better. And you can try to save someone's life, but inevitably it's up to them. And I know that I did whatever I could to try to save his life. And at the time we were getting a divorce. And so that wasn't public either. So people wanted to form their own opinions based on, based on what the media puts out there. And none of it was true. And so you have to really be careful about believing what the media wants to show you, because it's really what they want to show you. A lot of it is not truthful.
100%. Was there a point in your marriage that you realized that he was struggling really deeply with depression?
Yeah. I mean, 2 years into it, yes, he was struggling and I was there by his side wanting to help him, but it got to a point where it was beyond me. I'm not a professional. And so I did whatever I could. And I really tried to guide him with faith and love. And after 4 years, I didn't know what else to do. He needed professional help. And so, that's all I can really say is that I did whatever I could. And he was such a wonderful, loving, kind soul, but he was dealing with things that were beyond me.
For people who don't know what it's like to be in a relationship with someone struggling with depression or anxiety, can you explain what that's like?
It's hard because you're trying to carry a light. You're trying to carry them. And so it was not only him, but, you know, the responsibilities and all the animals and the house and all the other things that go along with marriage. And so you're trying to hold things together. You're trying to be the glue. Meanwhile, you're trying to convince this person that they must stay alive. They're needed. They're loved. They're cared for. There's a reason for them to be here. But again, you can only do so much.
I'm sure it was exhausting. And when you're trying to tell them these things, you were frustrated, right?
Yeah, it was exhausting. It was incredibly frustrating. But also, I wasn't in his head, so I didn't know what he was dealing with. And so I thought, okay, I need to have patience. I need to be as kind as I can. And even through the divorce, it wasn't official, but even the text message I sent him, I said, you know, I'll always be here for you. Just know that I'm here and I'm praying for you. And that was like, those were pretty much the last words I said to him. And then I got a call that he had taken his life at a gun range. And so, you know, those last
words.
What
was that moment like for you when you heard that?
It was the most horrible moment of my life. I can't even tell you. To relive that was just, it was horrific. I don't wish what happened to me upon anybody. Not my worst enemy. I don't wish what happened to me. I was on the beach. I was with a friend of mine on the beach and I got a call from an investigator and they had said, I'm so sorry to tell you this, Katie, but your husband shot himself at a gun range in California. And he had tried before, I think a month before in Ohio, but they wouldn't let him run a gun, thank God. And so, and sadly in California, he succeeded and he shot himself. And I didn't believe it. And like, there's no way that this happened. I don't even know what to say. I have to leave. I have to go. It was such a shock to me. It was like all a blur at that moment. But it was God putting me in the most serene place in my safe space near the ocean, because I'm an ocean person, near the beach, find out this information and with a friend of mine. And so I remember hanging up with the investigator, trying to find my car and walking on the beach in Los Angeles. And I started walking and I saw a hook sticking out of the sand. And the sun was hitting in such a way where I'm like, gosh, someone's going to really hurt themselves. I need to pick that hook up. It wasn't a hook. It was an upside down cross bracelet that I picked up out of the sand. And it was like God hit me upside the head. Like, this is why you're still here. Your faith is why you're still here. And my friend looked at me like, there's no way that that just happened. Like, they had seen a ghost, basically. It was such a shock to me and them that I can't believe that happened. And because I would have conversations with my husband about faith and about Jesus and about God, and just didn't think that it was being heard. And so I felt like this was a message to me saying, you are still here because of your faith in me. And so I held on to that for about 6 years. And then I thought, you know what? I need to throw it back where I found it. And so I went back to the beach and threw it back in. And I felt like that was just me releasing all of that pain and suffering that had happened during that time. And so, yeah, I just, within 24 hours, we had to bury him. And he was Jewish. And so, but I'm not sure how strong he was in his faith. So I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe there's a way that we could, I gave him a Bible. And I thought, okay, start with Old Testament, make it to the New Testament. Maybe this could save him. And all I can say that I tried my best. I tried my hardest. He was such a kind heart, such a kind soul.
Can you take us back to that season you briefly mentioned about when the rumors began and the tabloids exploded?
So yeah, so this is another crazy thing is that in the middle of the separation, the divorce, I didn't tell anybody. So I was selling my first documentary, Give Me Shelter. So I produced a film. It was mainly about rescuing animals, adopting, not shopping, the puppy mill crisis, shelter crisis, and then also wildlife trafficking. I mean, it was basically the top 10 animal welfare issues at that time. And it was released in 2015 on Netflix. So around that time, before I had sold it to the streaming platforms and Netflix, I went to the Cannes Film Festival, and there was a meeting being set up between myself and DiCaprio, and we had just run into each other randomly out and about in Cannes, and because, you know, it's just a film festival, you just run into people that you know, and so ran into each other, and he said, oh, there's a meeting being set up between us. I should definitely figure out a date to make that meeting happen. And I know that you have your film, Give Me Shelter, that you're going to be selling here. And he had his film, Ivory Game, that was showing at Cannes at that time. And so we were having a conversation, and we were out like everyone is in Cannes, and someone was taking a photo of us, unbeknownst to me. And we're all having a great time just talking. And really, if anyone listened to our conversation, the whole time we were talking about like endangered species and like elephants and rhinos and the rhino horn trade and the ivory trade. And it's like, people would be like, that is the most, why would you talk about that? And I'm like, well, that's because that's my passion. That's his passion. So I wouldn't be stupid enough to do anything other than that. If I wanted his support, he wouldn't respect me. Right. So I was 33 at the time. So really that's the extent of it. We were having a conversation about important issues about endangered species. And the photo was taken. And the next morning I got a call from my best friend's sister, Kelly Rizzo, who was actually married to Bob Saget, who also passed away, which is heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, Katie, you're on the cover of like Yahoo News with DiCaprio. And I said, what? And the first moment that came across my head is, I hope that Andrew doesn't see this, because this is not what people think it is. We were talking about our documentaries, and a documentary that I put my life savings into and that I took, 4 years to make, you know? And so it's not what people thought. It was a conversation. And then TMZ and all of these trashy media outlets picked it up and tried to sensationalize it. And then his friends, Andrew's friends, fueled it. And so making me look like I'm something other than who I am. And the people that know me truly know my heart and know that I would never do anything like that. So, and we were going through a divorce as well. So no one knew that. So then it just blew up. It was all over the media. It was a nightmare. I couldn't leave my house. And a month later is when Andrew took his life. So TMZ took that story and essentially re-released it a month later when he had passed and said, it must be because of these photos, which he was dealing with depression for a very long time. So I think since he was young. And I really didn't know at the time that we had gotten married that this was an issue. That was also hidden from me, which is not okay. So this is what happened. So I felt like I was literally put in the middle of Hollywood and stoned to death for something that I never did. And I've never talked about it. I had a couple meetings set up with, I think it was People Magazine, and I thought, these people are going to spin it. They're going to spin it. And not just People, but all these other Us Weekly and all those. I just felt I'm not going to I don't owe these people anything. I know who I am, and the people close to me know who I am. And I'm going to rise above this because I have a bigger mission here. I don't wish what happened upon anybody, but it's made me stronger as a result.
It's just sickening what the tabloids do, how they can take a picture and twist it, because pictures can appear all kinds of ways. You can be having a conversation with someone and they might catch you laughing and there's nothing going on. It's just disgusting and character assassination. And they just literally want to destroy someone's life by a lie to spin whatever narrative they want to spin.
They want. Exactly. Yes. And then of course it fuels it because the other side wants to place blame. And how could you place blame on somebody when you had absolutely nothing to do with that? You know, and sadly it was his choice. And I tried whatever I possibly could to save his life. And it inevitably is still that person's choice. And so every day I've been praying every day. And I was, for 2 years, I woke up every morning with like heart palpitations, like I was going to have a heart attack because of what I was put through and just being fought left and right. And what is the media going to come out with today? And I couldn't leave my house. And it was really, really terrible. I didn't think I was going to survive it. And then to add more on top of this tragedy, 7 months goes by and I get a call from one of my closest friends who introduced me to my first love. And this is before Andrew. This is when I first moved to LA over 20 years ago. His name was Greg Plitt. He was a big fitness guy. And he had gotten hit by a train 7 months after my husband. And so I didn't want to live anymore. And I got down on my hands and knees and I prayed to God to save my life. Because I thought, how could I lose? My husband was 40 and Greg was 37 at the time. And I thought, the worst pain you could possibly feel. Because I was still upset with my husband for him doing what he did. With Greg, it was clearly an accident. He got hit by a train. He was doing a fitness stunt, trying to outrun a train in Burbank, and he got hit. He didn't realize the speed of the train. And he lived life on the edge, Greg. But he will always be my first love. Always be my first love. And of course, my husband, you live people differently. You know, Greg was my first love. My husband was my second. I married my husband. But I loved them, you know, both the same, but differently. They were different people. And I don't believe there's just one person you love in your life. There's multiple. I love, you know, my girlfriends. I love my family. I love my mom. I love my animals. Love is not just like to put in a little box and give into one person. There's so many different types of love.
What were the lies you were tempted to believe about yourself and about God during this time? You just lost two people and then you had to experience the paparazzi and the twisting with TMZ. Yeah. What was that like for you?
It was heartbreak. I didn't think I could survive it. I really didn't. I thought, I'm going to die of a heart attack because of everything that was being thrown at me from all different angles. And I'm not going to get into all the details, but it wasn't necessarily from my family's side. Let's just put it that way. And I feel like, again, like if I could make it through this, I can make it through anything. This was a test. And two people came up to me about 6 months after this happened. They didn't know me, but one of them, I remember his name was Christopher Cross. I was in New York. I was promoting my documentary and he came up to me and I'll always remember this. And he said, "You made it through." And I go, "Do you know me? Do I know you?" And he goes, "No, I know you." He said, "You made it through." He said, "My darling, this was a test." He goes, "You need to keep going. You're here for a bigger purpose. You were put here for a purpose. You need to keep fighting." And I'm like, wow, this is just, I can't believe this. This person, I had no idea who this person was. And I said, "Did you read anything in the tabloids? Did you hear about the story?" And he goes, "No." He goes, "But I know you and I know your mission." He said, "This was a test and they tried to destroy you. They tried to get you down and they didn't win because your faith is too strong." And I said, wow, if that is an affirmation. And then another lady came up to me and
So you hit rock bottom. Did you tell me that you were on your kitchen floor or did I make this up?
I was literally, I told you that before. I was praying on my kitchen floor. Yeah. And yes. And it was after this happened and after I found out about Greg. So it was my husband and then Greg 7 months later. And I've never felt pain like this in my life. And we've all had a broken leg or a sprained ankle this is a different type of pain. This is a pain I can't even express to you. The pain, I couldn't breathe for, I would say, like a solid week. Like, where you can't catch your breath and you're like suffocating, basically. I couldn't talk. I couldn't breathe. I'm like, I cannot believe I lost the two loves of my life. I can't believe this. Why, God? Why did this happen? And so I'm on my kitchen floor praying, like, the tears just streaming down my face. I'm like, I cannot believe this is happening right now. I want to live. I didn't want to continue.
Did you turn to God during this time in desperation?
To God. Yeah, I cried out. I prayed to God to save my life. I said, please, I don't want to live anymore.
Would you say that you experienced his presence? Did you feel him?
Oh, 100%.
A turning point for you?
But the devil was working overtime, Shannon.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it was like, it was the most, I'm a very happy person. I'm very, and I know you are too. Like, I'm positive. I'm happy. I'm always trying to uplift others. No one really sees me like upset or depressed, right? I have never been so low in my life. And I just kept saying, why? Why is this happening? Why? Like, they're so young, 40 and 37. Why? I was 33. 33 is when Jesus died. This all happened when I was 33. And I thought that was 33 to me is a magic number. And 11, of course, on Deal or No Deal. But 33 is my number now. And anyways, I was on the floor and I thought, I can't let this destroy me. I know that Greg, specifically Greg, because we were in the same entertainment field, he was in fitness and he had done modeling. We had also done some modeling together and done a bunch of magazines, fitness magazines and things like that. And I know he would tell me, encourage me, like, you have to keep going. I would want you to keep going. I would want you to keep fighting. You can't let this get you down. And so it was really Greg's voice that really helped me, encouraged me to, like, you know, this is a test. Again, this is a test and you're going to make it through. And there's always light at the end of the tunnel. And I stood up and I thought, okay, there's a reason for everything. And this is going to make me stronger for something that I need to be a warrior for in the future.
What did healing look like for you practically and spiritually?
Ooh, well, let's see. It's been since 2014 and then Greg passed in early 15. So healing has been a journey, but prayer and faith has saved me. And so it's prayer every day. I remember for the first 2 years after all that happened, after their passing, I prayed and got down to my hands and knees every day. Because I thought, how am I going to, what am I going to do moving forward? Do I continue my foundation? Do I continue World Animal News? Do I continue in entertainment? And then now with all these terrible things that have been said in the media, like, how do I continue in entertainment? And I thought, and I kept praying to God, okay, please make this look clear for me. Like, what is this path that you're going to take me on? What is this? And the path was merging the two, merging what I've known since I was 11 years old, which is working in modeling and acting and hosting, and using that to be a voice for the voiceless. And that's what I did. And so then I started World Animal News as a actual news site. It was a radio show, a podcast at that time in Hollywood. And I hosted it for about a year and a half. And I thought, no, we need to turn this into like an actual news network because I know what's going on. The rest of the world doesn't know what's going on. So, and then we work on legislation, of course, endangered species, farm animals, domestic animals, all of it, undercover investigations. We cover it all. And that's how it all began. But it took about 2 years of solid praying every day for God to just help me and show me the way.
Was there a verse that you clung to?
Actually, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. That was how I always begin my prayers. But it wasn't a verse. It was just having a conversation with God. And that's what he wants. He wants us to have a relationship with him. And that's why, of course, the church is important because he says wherever two or more are to gather, I'm here, right? So that's important. But I think just having this open conversation, open dialogue and speaking with him and speaking from your heart and not holding anything back. I mean, I lost everything. Everything that I knew I had lost. I felt completely alone, but he never abandoned me. Never once.
There's been some verses that I clung to and I've even quoted in my mind at different times in my life. And I love the Bible because it really is living, active, sharper than a two-edged sword. And it can pierce, it can convict, it can encourage, comfort, bring hope. And I love the Bible. It's the only book that we will ever read that's living.
Yeah,
and of course. It has power.
And my favorite, I would say my favorite is not just because of the water company, but I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except through me, which is so true because so many people are lost. And if they just look and open God's word, I really think that they'll be inspired and it'll make so much sense because every problem that we have in the world, there's a solution in the Bible.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's incredible.
A question. Yes. It blows my mind. The Bible.
It's incredible. It really is. And it's so simple. And I think it's because it's so powerful and it has such power, people are afraid of it. I was afraid of it. I got to be honest. For many years, I was like, gosh, I just was so intimidated. Like, I can't open that. Like, that's, you know, and then.
It's because you didn't think you would understand it. What made it intimidating? Because some people might be able to relate to you.
It's filled with so much. And yes, I didn't think I could understand it. I thought, gosh, this is going to take some effort. This is going to take a long time to get through this. And to be honest, just because I work in, you know, we work in the news every day. And so I'm constantly reading and going over and I'm like, wow, to add another book, most important book, why would I, like, you know, to my life? I mean, gosh, I should have started reading a long time ago, right? But it wasn't until recently that I really, I mean, I knew the verses, but to really read it and really
meditate on it.
Meditate and also like research. What does this really mean? What does he mean by this? Because it's all parables. Most of it is parables, right? But then also, you know, the TV show The Chosen has really helped me.
I love The Chosen. I think they do a great job.
Yes. And
they picked the perfect person to be Jesus. He's phenomenal. Peter. I like Peter. He's got like a little bit of quirkiness to him.
Yes.
It makes them human. Like we sometimes think, well, they're the disciples. We think that they're on another level, but they're humans and they're flawed just like we are.
Exactly. And they have such a human aspect. You don't realize it. Like you're like, wow, they were truly humans. Like they were just normal people. But, you know, like obviously they had a faith, which just makes them like us. But obviously they were chosen. The Chosen. I think that it's just an incredible series and the way they did it. And Dallas Jenkins, I believe he's a producer and director. And I feel like he has a tremendous mission on this earth. The fact that he was able to do that through crowdfunding, no one would help. No one would fund it. Not one big studio. And then they just raised all that money for the whole entire mini series now. I think four different seasons, I believe. Went to the premiere of the last one and I met all the characters. And I got to be honest, you're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it. They look like in person, you're like, they're prophets. They're all adorable. They're all, yeah, felt very tall. Let's just put it that way. We're all very sweet, very nice. But I guess because we are tall, like I feel like sometimes when you're wearing heels, you're like 6 foot, right? I mean, you're
super
very tall too.
Yeah, I'm over 6 feet when I have heels on.
Exactly, same with me. So anyways, we're just incredible to be able to meet them and talk with them and just get their perspective on everything. And Dr. Matthew, actually the actor that played Matthew, and he was just a pleasure to talk with and so sweet and so nice. And I understand why they cast everybody for The Chosen, because they truly are so unique in every way. And they also relate to, you know, the 12 disciples. So yeah.
What would you say to the listener who feels buried under shame or grief? Because you've come out on the other side. So if they don't see any light, what words of encouragement could you give them?
I would say, keep giving it to God, keep praying. And I would say, try to start your morning. That's what I try to do every morning. I've got like all these animals just waiting for me to, you know, to feed them in the morning. So of course I do that first. I have to, because they would get mad at me if I didn't do that. So like, I feed them, I clean, I give them fresh water, and then I pray. I mean, it's every morning. And I'm trying to read the Bible every morning. And it's really, it puts you in a different state of mind. And it makes your day, I guess, more meaningful with God's lead. You know, God will lead you. And if you're going to him, he's going to lead you. If you're giving your heart to him and you trust him, you're going to see his hand in everything. And truly, ever since I started reading and opening the Bible every morning and praying, I've seen it. I've seen it time and time again, and I've seen miracles happen as a result.
I think when I was younger, I used to look for him in the big things, like America's Next Top Model or whatever it might be, but it was always big, but he's in the little details. And I always look for him every day. I call him God wings. I think other people do too. It's so encouraging when you look for the answer to prayers. It might be something small, but it's not small, because you're reminded that he sees you and that he loves you and that he cares about you and that you're the apple of his eye. And
100%.
I just love looking for him in my day to day, and not just in the big things, but even in the small things.
But it's interesting, like the things that I thought, oh, this is so small and this is insignificant or this doesn't matter, were actually the most significant things. So it is about the small things, and it's about the small steps, and it's about the you know, gosh, connection with just people that you see every day. And if you could just bring one more person closer to God, the goal is, okay, you want somebody in heaven saying, I'm here because of Shannon. I'm here because of Katie. That's what he wants. He wants us to spread his message. And the devil is working overtime. We see it every day. We know it. And we know he's not going to win.
He's not winning the end. I love the Billy Graham quote. I've read the last page of the Bible. It's all going to turn out all right. So we know who wins in the end.
Of course, God always wins, even though this is the devil's playing ground and he is trying his damnedest.
He is, and we have to keep praying. If you turn on the news, they want you to worry. They want you to be afraid. They want you to be scared. They can be weather alerts, and this is going to happen. That's going to happen. Better be careful. This doesn't get passed. This might lead to this. It's constantly.
Well, fear is not of God. So when you have, I'll say one thing to those of you who are watching, if you feel fear or anxiety or worry, none of that is of God. That is of the other guy. I'm not going to say his name. So that's why you just have to keep seeking God and keep praying and ask and you shall receive. That's another one of my favorites, ask and you shall receive. It is 100% true. And I've talked to hundreds of people that have prayed, they have true faith, has come true. And those that haven't come true is maybe because it wasn't good for them. It's God's will, right? There's certain things that haven't come true. I'm like, God, why hasn't it come true? I've been praying that to you for that for 10 plus years. And it's clearly in his timing. We want it now, now. I am so impatient. I want everything now. But it's whatever's best for us. He knows what's best for us. We don't. And heaven's timing is different than our timing.
So true. He says 1,000 years is like a day and a day is like 1,000 years. God is not in a rush. He is not worried. He can see all of our lives laid out before his very eyes. And he's like, oh, that's going to work out. He's at complete peace. We get nervous and afraid because we can't control it. Or my mind, I like to figure things out. And growing up, I tried to figure God out. I believe that he was the God of the impossible. So I did suffer great disillusionment sometimes because my desires didn't always line up with his will. Mm-hmm. And that was hard. But like you said, we don't see the whole picture and he does. And he's not in a rush. And if it's his will, he will work it out. And if it's not, he has something better in mind.
Absolutely. And looking back, I'm like, wow, well, thank God that didn't happen the way I wanted it to happen. Right? I'm like, because that would have been a nightmare.
Even in modeling, and I hear now about the sexual abuse and different things that went on that I was spared from because I didn't go to the clubs. They sent a car to come and pick me up. I never went. And different jobs I didn't get. Now I'm like, you were protecting me, Lord, from
100%. I mean, when we were younger, it's so hard to like grow up in this business. And I understand why my mom never wanted me to get involved in it. I understand looking back because I was spared many times. And I believe that we have guardian angels.
What's one lie God replaced with the truth that maybe you believed about yourself, about life?
Oh my gosh. What's one lie that he replaced with the truth?
I can think of one. You said that maybe you didn't think your documentaries, maybe you just thought that you were done because of the tabloids.
Yeah. And that's not the case. That was actually the complete opposite, is because the truth will prevail. The truth comes out eventually, whether it's 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. I mean, I'm going to write a book about this one day. I've got a lot to say. And again, like, I'm so blessed that I was able, you're the first podcast, you're the first show that I've ever told about this in depth.
I'm so honored. I'm glad you're sharing it because I think it's so important that outsiders who don't understand what it's like to be you, you've been in magazines, you've made documentaries. Who's ever talked to Leonardo DiCaprio? I haven't. You have a different life experience and they don't understand how tabloids and that whole realm and that whole world is. And it's demonic, some of the things.
Is demonic. And I think there's a demonic foothold in the entertainment industry. And I want to just also make it clear that you have to be very careful what you consume as far as watch and listen, because I'm not going to throw any streaming platforms under the bus, but there's several streaming platforms that have a lot of things that we should not be watching. Anything demonic, anything that is not of the light, you should not be watching.
No, because you're opening yourself up. Why would you want to crack the door open to those things?
You don't want to crack the door open.
We're told to guard our hearts.
Especially music. Music is because the other guy, I'm going to say his name again.
The evil one.
The evil one. You know, he was a fallen angel and what he had, the most beautiful voice. So
worship leader.
So what do you think he has a foothold on? Music, the music industry.
In high school, I rode to school with different people and they would play different songs. And I liked the beat, but you can't just like the beat because the words are going into your mind. You're meditating on them. You're thinking about them. Then they're seeping their way down into your heart, because don't you think it's quite amazing how we can remember lyrics to a song, but we can't remember a Bible verse?
Right? Exactly. So there's a reason for that. And like I said, this is a very fallen world like I have never seen. I had no idea. I thought, like, when I was younger, oh, life is all rainbows and gumdrops or whatever. I thought it was like, oh, it's going to be amazing when you grow up. And not to say it isn't, not to say that there aren't amazing moments, but this is definitely a roller coaster. And we're being tested. Every moment is a test. Every moment of my life has been a test. And some you pass and some you don't. But I think that if you keep seeking God and you keep seeking good and the light, you will succeed. And like I said, there is always light at the end of the tunnel. You just have to have faith that, you know, and ask God to lead you in the right direction.
For someone that's a skeptic, maybe they've suffered loss and instead of running to God like you do, they're mad at God and they are distant. What would you say to them?
Don't run from God. Don't be distant because he is your only lifesaver. He will be the only one to save your life. Jesus will be the only one. And people get confused by God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. They're all in one. It's the Holy Trinity. Jesus came to earth as our Lord and Savior. And I'm sure you can speak on that, Shannon.
He took on human flesh.
Exactly.
And he experienced pain and suffering. And he experienced all of our emotions. So he can relate to us, but he was without sin.
Exactly.
So he's God in the flesh.
He's God in the flesh. Exactly. And so a lot of people don't have a really hard time understanding. And I couldn't understand it for a long time. I just didn't understand. How could this man be taking on all of our sins? Because then we would be all be going to hell because we're all sinners. So if he didn't take on our sins, we wouldn't be going to heaven.
He took the punishment we deserved. And by his blood, we can be forgiven and be restored back into a right relationship with the Father because sin separates us from the Father.
Exactly. 100%. Preach.
So tell me about your water company. You mentioned it just for a second. I would love to know more about it. And what are you up to now?
So I'm filming Protector of the Wild. So our third documentary of just about wolves and the plight of, you know, what they're facing in North America. And they're being basically exterminated and driven out of the national parks and then shot and killed by cattle ranchers in the meat and dairy industry. And it's just heartbreaking. And at one point we had millions of wolves throughout the United States. And now there's like less than, I believe, 14,000 in the continuing United States. I believe that's not including Alaska, but I'll have to double check those numbers and I'll send them over to you. But it's heartbreaking. So we're halfway done with the documentary and we're trying to raise funding to finish it. And so anyone that loves wolves out there, please donate to Peace for Animals. Because we've been, I would say, it's been about 3 years. So another year to film and then to edit and then, of course, to get it on streaming platforms. So
does it take 4 years in total to film, record, edit?
Yeah. On average, like 2 years to film, a year to edit, just because we have so much footage. And then it took me a year to sell the last one I did with Clint Eastwood. That was Why on Earth. And that was, obviously, this is the hardest one, but that was probably the most difficult as far as filming, because we traveled throughout Africa, Indonesia. We filmed elephants, rhinos, orangutans. We were in the forest with them. We were experiencing what it's like to get your boots on the ground and the people that are dedicated to saving their lives. We highlighted their incredible work. And so it was called Why on Earth? And we got Clint Eastwood to be basically the last interview. And I just prayed on it. I thought, gosh, if we could get Clint to be the voice and face of this documentary, I think it could, you know, change hearts and minds. And so
do you go to all these places?
Yeah. So that was the hardest because of the travel. And then I had to also bring my crew with me. So, and then we raised $1 million for that film.
Wow.
So that was not easy, but it was worth it. I couldn't sell it for a year. And it was the third sales agent was, they always say like, you know, third time's the lucky. Is that the, what's the
third
saying?
Time's a charm.
Third time's
saying.
A charm. I was like, yeah, it's the third time's a charm, truly. So they're like, oh, just give it out for free. I said, I'm not giving it out for free. I got Clint Eastwood in this film, and this is way too important to give out for free. I said, we need to get this on the major streaming platforms. And so Netflix bought my first one, Give Me Shelter, but they didn't buy this one. But we got it on like, all the rest of the streaming platforms, Apple, iTunes, Amazon, and a couple airlines as well. The airlines picked it up. So yeah, so this one, you know, we need somebody to take Clint's place as kind of the spokesperson for this one. So just about wolves.
I saw a picture of you on Facebook. Was that in Uganda with little children?
Oh, yeah. No, that was in Kenya.
Kenya.
That was in Kenya. Yeah.
Were you filming something there or was that a missions trip?
So that was actually last year. So yeah, I was just there actually with a group that I travel with quite often and I do some conservation work during their trips. And I was actually in South Africa for a month earlier the year before. So yeah, so it was in February, I believe. I can't believe it's last year. I feel like it's been like a couple of years. But so I went to Africa twice last year. And then the second trip was around my birthday. So in September, we visited the school. Olamai is in primary school in Kenya, I believe. And so they do some conservation work there. And they needed help with computers. And they really don't have anything. They don't even really have clean water. They have a well that they have to pump every day. And floors of a school are dirt. I mean, it's just, it's not, they don't have the luxuries we have here. And so, so I've been helping them. I bought them a couple computers and hopefully we can get some clean water. And that's where the water company comes in. So yeah.
Our church, Be Renewed Church, has drilled a few wells in Africa. And what's interesting is that when you drill a well, it's an opportunity for a pastor to be in there. And then all these people get to hear the gospel because now they have clean drinking water.
I love that.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it doesn't cost that much to give a bunch of people clean drinking water. I think we raised two wells with generosity of our church. Yeah. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. I forget the number that they can drink, but it's like just clean drinking water, something that we take for granted here in America.
Yeah. They can't just turn on a tap in their kitchen sink. They don't have it. I mean, I was in Ethiopia as well, and I'm sponsoring a family in Ethiopia, and they didn't have the basic necessities. They had one bed for six children. Again, like the dirt floor, like the house is falling apart. And I've never seen any living conditions like this. They don't even have a bathroom. I don't even know how they shower, they wash. I mean, it's that bad. And so I encourage people, like, if they ever get the chance to travel to Africa, go to Ethiopia. I know that people are probably afraid to go, but don't be afraid to go. I'm sure they would just, when they saw us, they were thrilled because that means that there's help. There's people that care. There's people that don't see it as like being fearful of going. I mean, everyone I talk to is, I can't believe you've gone. I can't believe you've gone. I said, well, why? They're so scared to go. And don't be scared. I mean, these are people just like, they have the same values as us. They just don't have the same luxuries. They don't have the same government system. I don't know. The corruption runs deep, but this is worldwide. Ethiopia used to be one of the wealthiest countries, right?
Filming these documentaries, does it provide you an opportunity to share the gospel with the people in those specific countries?
100%. Yeah. And that's something that I want to do more in the future. Ever since I started opening the Bible every morning, now I'm like, okay, I know exactly. So that's the thing, is when you have faith, but you haven't read the Bible, it's hard to preach on it because you don't necessarily know God's word based on what you've read, right? So you really have to know it in order to preach it. So now that I know it, now I feel like I can better preach it and I can share the gospel freely and more openly. And so next time I go to Ethiopia or Africa, which I try to make it out there every year to visit our animal welfare partners, Care for Wild in South Africa. And we also filmed at Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, even though we've helped them, they're not one of our partners, but I'll love to continue to support their work. And they rescue elephants throughout Kenya, and Care for Wild rescues rhinos throughout South Africa.
That's amazing. That would be a great opportunity for you because you travel the world, and to be able to visit all those countries and to be able to bring them a Bible. Or we just recently heard about Unknown Nations, and we're doing that as our Christmas offering, but they're solar Bibles and they're the language of the country that they're in, because not all of them know how to read. And so they can play these Bibles and they get to hear the Bible all day long while they're working. And
I love that. Yeah. Let me know if I can help in any way. And of course, the water company, the Way Truth Life Water that I just founded, is to also spread God's message and basically the opposite of, I don't even want to say the name, Liquid Death. And that's actually where I got the idea. I was at the Sundance Film Festival, and Liquid Death, I think, was on one of the, I don't know if they were.
I didn't even know what that was because it looks like a beer can. I'm like, what is that?
Well, I think it's done on purpose, right?
And teenagers. Is yours water bottles or do you drill wells?
Yes, I know it's water bottles. So it's the Way Truth Life Water. And I just started the company about a month ago. And it's been in the works. I mean, like, I just physically got the water bottles a month ago, but it started like a year ago as far as just trying to develop the logo and, you know, everything copywritten and trademarked and everything. So
that is awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to see the logo and everything.
Yeah. I'll definitely show you. I'll send you some water.
Are they available now to purchase?
Yeah, you can purchase them on the waytruthlifewater.com. And so, I think we're doing 6-packs and 12-packs. And so it's just a portion of the proceeds will go to animal welfare, conservation, and drilling wells throughout Africa and in other countries. It's just a way to spread God's word and then also give back, because many people aren't donating to animal causes and conservation. So I thought, okay, this could be a really great way to help foundations around the world and people and animals.
That's amazing, Katie. If people want to find you, is there a way that they can possibly follow you on Instagram or contact you?
Just follow me at KatieCleary11 in private. And World Animal News is our news network. Peace for Animals. If you want to make a donation, that would be amazing. Peaceforanimals.net to help us finish the documentary. And then The Way Truth Life Water.
I'm going to check it out as soon as I get done. I can't wait to see it. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah. And the next round will be aluminum cans. So yeah. So this one is, they're 100% recyclable now, but we want to go the aluminum route and more sustainable.
I'm wondering if you sleep.
Well, with 11 animals, it is, it's
no,
not much.
No, just because documentaries, water, these interviews, you're flying to Kenya, you're going to Uganda. I don't know where in the world is Katie?
Gosh, I don't know. My mom says, where in the world is Waldo? That's basically like, same thing. Yeah, where is she? I'm like, well, I'm in Africa this week.
Hey, you know what? We're given one life and I want to redeem the time. And I know you do as well. You want to share the gospel and make disciples of Jesus Christ because it's all about him.
100%. And I agree. And I love the work that you're doing.
So much, Katie. I sure do appreciate it.
Of course. God bless you. And thank you for everyone who's watching. And thank you for the amazing journey that you've shared too, Shannon. You're an incredible inspiration for so many. And God bless you.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
That's okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus, there is always one who brings clarity. We'll see you next time.